Happy Mother's Day. Mothers are something we all have in common. Because whether yours is living with you or still on this planet or gone home to be with the Lord, everybody here has a mother. It's kind of a biological fact. You can't get here without one. I guess Eve would have been the exception, right? I wonder how Eve celebrated Mother's Day. She had kids. That's how she celebrated Mother's Day. We're going to take a break from what we've been doing. We've been studying the fruit of the Spirit. More specifically, we've been using those fruits, the fruit of the Spirit, the aspects of the fruit of the Spirit, to talk about what it means to live in commitment. Now, we're going to take a break from the fruit series, but we aren't going to take a break from this word. Remember, this is our word of the year. The word is commitment. We've been looking at this word since we got to the very first Sunday in January. We took the first month of the year and we talked about the cost of this commitment. What's it going to cost me if I actually want to live a committed life for Christ? We spent it was supposed to be the next 6 weeks. 6 weeks plus just two snow weeks. We spent talking about the living water and what we're committing our lives to. At Easter, we examined the perfect commitment, Jesus. As I said, we've been looking at the fruit of commitment. And well, I guess when you look at the word commitment and you're going to try to tie it to Mother's Day, it's not very hard because somehow the word mom and commitment, they seem to go hand in hand. You just don't have kids and you not be committed to them, not if you're going to be a mom. It means that sometimes you're going to sacrifice for them. It means that sometimes you're going to do some things that they don't want you to do. It means that you're always going to be concerned about them. I don't care if they're 4 or 54. You're still concerned about your kids. You still expect them to contact you every now and then if you're still around. And if you're not around, you know what? We all spend time on this day thinking about mom. It's just what we do. Moms play a very important commitment role in our life. It's not lost on me the fact preachers love Mother's Day. You know why? There are two Sundays in the year you can count on that you'll have good attendance at church. Easter and Mother's Day. It's because somehow we've misplaced the cart before the horse. The guys usually aren't the ones that lead their families to church. It's usually mom. And you can pretty much count on Mother's Day. Mom will rally the troops and have them here with her. So when we start talking about this idea of commitment and mom, there are a lot of ladies that we could look at. I mean, we could take a look at Mary, mother of Jesus. Talk about somebody that had to be a committed mom. I mean, all the way from the point at which you found out you were pregnant, you realized you were going to have the Messiah. You were going to be raising God's son. How would you like to have that responsibility? Talk about wait till your father gets home. I don't think so. So then you have Elizabeth. This is another good mom that we could use. She's the mom of John the Baptist, and it's another one of those kind of those miracle births and the fact that she was kind of too old to do this. She was kind of like grandma having kids. And so she would have been a great example how to do this later in life. We could have went with the lady that came to Jesus, the unknown mom, the lady that just came begging for her daughter to be healed. And I thought that would be kind of redundant because that's what we did last year. So when I began to look, I began to think about where is a good example of a mom that showed ultimate commitment. And I came back with Hannah. Now maybe you don't know who Hannah is. Well, you probably don't know because, well, we like the New Testament a lot. And Hannah, well, she's one of those Old Testament moms. Nancy read the prayer that Hannah prayed after her experience. And well, Hannah was kind of rejoicing at that point, but I want to go a little further back in her story. We're going to be in 1 Samuel chapter 1 this morning. So if you have your copy of God's Word, you can go ahead and start flipping that way because we're pretty much going to be there for the whole time. We're going to take a look at this story of Hannah because, well, Hannah is kind of a unique kind of mom. See, Hannah didn't do things the way that we thought. As a matter of fact, you might say Hannah had some difficulty becoming a mom. We're going to begin off right there in verse 1 and 2. We're going to take a look at Hannah's plight. There was a certain woman of Ramathaim. I didn't name these people or these towns, okay, just so you know. A Zophite from the hill country of Ephraim, whose name was Elkanah, son of Jehoam. It sounds like I should be speaking Klingon when I read these names. The son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zuth, the son of Emramite, who had two wives. One was called Hannah, and the other Paniah. Paniah had children. Hannah had none. So we begin talking about Hannah, and right off the bat, you can see Hannah has a plight in the fact that she has no children. Now, there are lots of ladies in the world that don't have kids. Matter of fact, it's always one of the big debates when you celebrate Mother's Day. What do you do with the ladies that don't have kids? Well, you know what? Just because you didn't never give birth doesn't mean that you don't have motherdom in your history. We mother in all kind of different ways. I've seen people that don't have kids be mothers to the elderly, mothers to other people's kids. This maternal instinct kind of comes into the culture of being a woman. It just kind of happens. And the thing is that, well, this woman, she had no kids, and that was particularly bad in her society because, you know what? These were the bloodline of the Jewish society, the land that you inherited when you moved into the area. It gets passed down from generation to generation, but only amongst the males. Remember, we're in the Old Testament. Women are allowed to own property. Therefore, if you don't have children, specifically male children, well, you know what? It was a disgrace. You were looked down upon in the community. You were looked down upon simply because you had no children to be your heir. So here's Hannah. No kids. And these kids, well, they were supposed to be her retirement plan, weren't they? I mean, what's going to happen when husband dies? Wife can't own property. She has to have somebody that's going to take care of her. That's the way the society was set up. And so not only was she concerned about her here and now, Hannah had to become concerned of her future. This is where Hannah found herself. This distressed her greatly. And I guess it sort of bothered her husband because, well, her husband had taken care of his bases. Her husband, her marriage, well, her husband had two wives. Now, just a message, quick message for men. I know it's Mother's Day, but I just want to let you know, guys, it's never a good thing when there are two women. It just doesn't work out well. It never ends well. Doesn't matter whether you're married to them or doesn't matter whether you've just got two relationships that you're trying. It doesn't end well. Well, this guy, he decided I'm going to have two wives. Now, this wasn't uncommon. I mean, remember all the way back at the beginning in Genesis when Abraham wasn't producing that offspring? And so it was actually Sarah that had the idea that I'm going to bring you somebody else and you can produce an heir through her and that way it will be covered. We'll have our basis. Because this idea that you're going to have a second wife in biblical times, it wasn't unheard of. But you know, the assumption here is that, well, Hannah was first. Hannah was probably wife number one. We know that because her name was listed first. She was the woman that was the chosen one. And the only reason Paniah probably was even in the picture was because there were no kids. She was of greater honor. According to verses 4 and 5, right there in 1 Samuel, it says, whenever the day came for Elkanah to sacrifice, he would give portions of the meat to his wife Paniah and to all her sons and daughters. But to Aunt Hannah, he gave a double portion because he loved her and the Lord had closed her womb. So she was probably the one that this gentleman had fallen in love with. It was the one that he had chosen to marry right off the bat. The other one was kind of just somebody that was there. And then we see as we're going, well, the situation, as I said, it never gets well. It became combative. The two wives, they became rivals. This is what it says in verses 6 through 8. Because the Lord had closed Hannah's womb, her rival kept provoking her in order to irritate her. This went on year after year. When Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, her rival poked her till she wept and would not eat. Her husband Elkanah would say to her, Hannah, why are you weeping? Why don't you eat? Why are you downhearted? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons? I want to break this down where Hannah finds herself. Because it would have been easy for Hannah just to give up at this point. Because not only were they rivals, you know what? She was provoked and made fun of in her own house. There she was, day after day, year after year, it said, this went on. And there she was, and the other lady was flaunting all the kids that she had. And you know what? They would pick on her and call her names. And then after they picked on her and called her names, she would flaunt all of the kids in front of her. And Hannah just kind of had to take it. Says she couldn't eat. She came to the table and she just sat there and she wept and she cried. And you know what? She lived in depression. She just couldn't get her mind off the fact that, you know what, here I am in this situation. It's not my fault. I didn't do this. I didn't ask for this. This isn't what I had intended. I didn't want to have another woman in my marriage. This was supposed to be just me and him for all of my life. Here's the funny thing. Well, her husband, he just seemed kind of clueless, doesn't he? He looked at poor Hannah and he said, what are you crying for? Why are you weeping? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons? Well, I guess maybe Hannah should have asked him that question before he brought the second girl in. You know, don't I mean more to you than kids? But husband doesn't have a clue. He's just kind of sitting there wondering, what did I do wrong? And Hannah's struggling. But I have to give it to her because Hannah stayed committed to her husband. She didn't walk out on the relationship. She stayed committed. I know a lot of ladies that have lived in bad relationships from husbands that were kind of clueless, and some of them just bad relationships. And I've watched ladies stay committed. And I have to marvel at that sometimes. Excuse me. Too much cough drop. Too much flower store. So I marvel at that idea. And this isn't a sermon to tell you need to stay in a bad relationship, but I marvel that level of commitment. That she just kind of stuck with it year after year. So I have to wonder, Hannah's commitment, how did she get there? How is it that Hannah absolutely positively modeled her commitment? Well, Hannah did some things. As her story begins to unfold and we look at Hannah's commitment, Hannah made some outward appearances of just how committed she was, not just to her marriage relationship, but to this idea of who Hannah was. You see, Hannah, she knew exactly what to do with her situation. She committed it to God. Right there in verse 10, it says, in her deep anguish, Hannah prayed to the Lord, weeping bitterly. How distraught was Hannah over the situation she found herself in? Well, look at the words. It says she had anguish. You know what anguish is, don't you? Anguish is the point at which you are just so upset, it physically hurts to be upset. She was in anguish. It's the same word that Jesus was used for Jesus when he looked at the cross. It said when he was out there at the Garden of Gethsemane, he says his soul was in anguish. Of course, Jesus was so anguished, he sweat drops of blood. It says she was weeping. This isn't just a few tears. Hannah found herself and the tears just poured uncontrollably as she was there before God. And it says that there was actually some bitterness to what she was doing. It says she wept bitterly. God, why did you do this to me? Lord, why me? I guess it could have been very easy for Hannah to just kind of give up on God because it really seemed like God had given up on her, hadn't it? And then to add insult to injury, well, this wasn't a one-time prayer for Hannah. She was praying, and well, there she was. And it says, Hannah was praying in her heart, and her lips were moving. Skipped a verse there. As she kept praying, the Lord Eli observed her mouth. So Hannah was sitting there, and she was praying, and she was praying, and she was praying, and she was praying. And then to add the insult to injury, guess what we get? The religious people get involved in Hannah's situation. You have to I want to just kind of take the bat and whop Eli here for a second, because he walked up to Hannah. Here's this woman that's going through all this distraught. She's brought her prayer to church, and she's sitting there and she's praying, and this is what Eli said to her. Hannah was praying in her heart, and her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. Eli thought she was drunk and said to her, "How long are you going to stay drunk? Put away your wine." So here is this woman. She's pouring out her heart. She's got a clueless husband. She's got a woman sitting in her house that's provoking her. She can't have kids. And she goes to church to fix her problem, and the preacher gives her grief. You got to be kidding me. This woman just would have been ready to run, but that's not what she did. You see, she was committing her situation to God. She wasn't committing her situation to the church. She wasn't committing her situation to the priest. She was putting her situation in God's hands. And then after she did that, well, she committed herself to God. This is what we read as the story continued. "And she made a vow saying, 'Lord Almighty, if you only look on your servant's misery and remember me and not forget your servant.'" Now, the word that sticks there in mind is the word servant. Because Hannah was now pouring herself out, and she says, "Hey God, remember your servant? Remember me?" And I find this interesting, because you know what? That word, servant, I guess she could have taken the time to blame God for her situation. "Lord, why'd you do this to me? Lord, don't you understand how important kids are? Don't you understand?" But she says, "No, God, can you just remember your servant?" She could have asked the questions. I guess she could have even demanded God's attention. But instead, she acknowledged God for who he is. Instead, she said, "Hey, sovereign God, can you just look on your servant here? Can I just have a brief conversation for you?" She's gonna commit herself to God. She's taken not only her situation, but she's taken her entire life, and she's placing that in God's hands. She's saying, "It's not just about the no children. Just take my entire life. I am your servant. I am submitting myself to you, God." Now, you know what that means, don't you? God says no. She's going to have to accept that. That means if the ball doesn't bounce her way, she's going to have to accept that. She's going to have to live it just as God said, because that's what a servant does. But then she does something that I think is kind of how we do things. See, her prayer changed her outlook. As she committed herself, and she committed herself to God, this is what came in verses 18 and 19. She said, "May your servant find favor in your eyes." And she went her way and ate something, and her face was no longer downcast. Early the next morning they arose, and they worshiped before the Lord. You see what happened there? We're only a few verses into this, and Hannah's entire situation had flipped. Here she was, and she placed herself in God's hands, and just like we do at times, you know what? It improved. It did. It says that she came before God and she placed herself there. And just that fact of acknowledging who God was in her life, it said, "You know what? I found favor in your eyes." Then she got up and she ate something. That which she could not physically do before, she now did. She was eating. No longer was her face downcast. She was what? Looking upward. So much so, what did she do next? She went and worshiped. Now I want you to think about Hannah at this point. What had changed? Nothing. Did she have any kids? No. Had her plight been removed? Was she still going to have to go and look at the other woman in the household and all the sons and daughters that she had? Yes. So how did we go from Hannah having a plight where she couldn't eat and being depressed to the fact that Hannah is now full of hope? Well, that's what happens when you place your hands in God's life. This idea that our God reigns, this idea that the Lord is there, well, it just does something for you to understand. God is in control of the situation. Hannah's prayer lifted her spirits because she committed herself to God. And then she also, well, she committed her child to God. Now, this is important because she had no kids at this point. But this is what she said. But give her a son, and then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life. No razor will ever be used on his head. I guess she's doing what a lot of us do. Here's what she's saying. Hey, God, let me make a deal with you. You give me the son. You give me the kid. I'll give the kid right back to you. I'll make sure that he lives a life that's holy. I will commit my child's life to you. You know the difference is? She meant it. This is what happened in verse 21 and 22. When her husband Elkanah went up with all his family to offer the annual sacrifice to the Lord to fulfill his vow, Hannah did not go. She said to her husband, after the boy is weaned, I will take him and present him before the Lord, and he will live there always. Now we fast forwarded at least 9 months into the future, probably a little further than that, because now God answered Hannah's prayer, and there is the son. And now, Hannah, it's time to decide. Are you going to live up to your commitment? Remember what you told God when you were kneeling in that temple? You said that you were going to give him back to God. And well, Hannah said, not just yet. I'm going to wait till he's weaned. I'm going to wait until he's able to nourish himself. But God, I'm not going to forget the commitment. God, I'm going to take him back to you. Not only did she mean it, ultimately, she did it. Verses 24 through 28. After he was weaned, she took the boy with her, young as he was, along with a three-year-old bull and an ephah of flour and the skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord of Shiloh. And when the bull had been sacrificed, they brought the boy to Eli, and she said to him, pardon me, Lord, as surely as you live, I am the woman who stood here beside you praying to the Lord. I prayed for this child, and the Lord had granted me what I asked of him. So now I give him to the Lord for his whole life. He will be given over to the Lord. And he worshiped the Lord there. I bet you it's the last time Eli ever interrupted somebody's prayer life. Because you know what? I don't think this is what Eli had in mind when he said, hey, what are you doing here doing this? Eli's probably thinking, you know what? This daycare center wasn't what I was thinking about. But Hannah took it seriously. She took the commitment of her child seriously. Not only did she bring him to the church, she gave him back to the church. By the way, we're not recommending this today. Okay? This is not on the agenda today. I have a full quiver of my own, thank you. Maybe we'll do an exchange sometime, but no, this is not what we want to do today. But I do want to show you this woman, she made a commitment to God of not only her situation, of not only herself, not only her child, but she followed through with all of it. That's quite a commitment. I have two kids. That means my wife has two also. I could not see my wife ever willing, okay, maybe some days we could give them up. But on a regular basis, for all of their life, keep in mind, she didn't live in Jerusalem. That means she's only going to see her only son. She's only going to see him when it's the special occasions when they make the trip to Jerusalem. He's going to grow up outside of her care. That would be hard for a mom, wouldn't it? That would be devastating for a mom, especially when it's the only one you've got. You spent your whole life praying for this child. Don't you think God would understand if you just kept him for a little while? But this is what the word commitment is. It isn't just saying, God, I will. It isn't saying, God, I understand. It's saying, God, I will do it all the way to the end. That's Hannah's commitment. And that's the commitment that God is looking for from us. He's looking for us as Christians to commit our lives the same way. To commit our lives to God, to commit our situations to God, whatever they are. Whatever you're struggling with, whatever God has put in your life, whatever the stumbling blocks are, hey, put those in God's hands. And after you commit the situation, you know what? Commit yourself to God. Humble yourself in the sight of the Lord. Commit your future to God. That's what she had done. And then follow through. And of course, this has a really great ending because you know what? God honored Hannah's commitment. This is kind of the ending of Hannah's story. It's the last time we see her in Scripture. And the Lord was gracious to Hannah. We're in 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 21. And the Lord was gracious to Hannah, and she gave birth to 3 sons and 2 daughters. More kids. Meanwhile, the boy Samuel grew up in the presence of the Lord. How did God honor Hannah's commitment? Well, he gave her more kids. That wasn't the last one, because she presented her first back to God. He said, you know what? I've got so much more in store for your life. I've got some more kids we're going to bless you with. Not only girls, we're going to give you boys. That's got to be a big deal. Not only was she blessed just physically with more children, she was blessed through Samuel's life. Do you know who Samuel is? Samuel was the last judge of Israel. Samuel was a political powerhouse. Samuel was a great priest. It was Samuel who anointed the first king of Israel. That would be Saul. It was Samuel who found David and anointed him. It was Samuel that was the person that spoke to both kings. It was Samuel that led an empire into being as David became king. All because of the commitment of the one woman. Because this woman decided to do exactly what she said. And then all because of that, well, it was Hannah's willing commitment. Her situation, herself, her children. God honored it all. And I guess here's the question. What about you? What have you got in your life that you're willing to commit to God? Do you think you could be like this woman? Do you think you could take the situation wherever you find yourself, whatever you're struggling with, whatever your burden is, do you think you could take that off and give it to God? Now, that's always a nice thought. I got to tell you, I've laid so many burdens at God's feet over my years that it's not even funny. The problem is usually when I come and I lay them at God's feet, you know what I do? I pick them up and take them home with me. I mean, Hannah didn't do that. She laid that burden there and she left. And oh man, it was like a weight off of her shoulders. Can you do that? That situation that's just tearing you up, can you lay that at God's feet? Can you commit that? Can you commit your life to God? Can you say, you know what, Lord, I don't know what it is that you have in store for me in the future, but whatever it is, I'm willing to do whatever it is. Wherever you want to go, that's what I'll do. I can make that kind of a commitment. Can you commit your future to God? Can you look at God and say, you know what, down the road, I don't know how this all pans out, but I am going to stay committed to you all the way through my life. How far are you willing to take this commitment thing in your life today? That's a tough question. And we're going to do a time of decision for you to ponder this. Maybe you're here today and you know what, you've never made that first commitment. That first commitment is understanding what it means to be a Christian. What it means to follow Christ. That commitment is coming forward and giving your life to Christ and following Him in baptism. Maybe you've never taken that step. Let me encourage you. Maybe this is the day you take that very first step. You put yourself out there and you begin to start that walk. If you've accepted that, maybe you've just gone through life and you know what? You've picked up some of that proverbial baggage. And on it's gone. And man, you just got these two big suitcases full of woes and you're just carting through your life. Maybe this decision time is time for you to lay those bags down. Give that situation to God. Stop fighting it. Let me encourage you, whatever you need to do during this time, do so. You can do there at your pew. You can come forward. I'll pray with you. You can come forward and kneel and pray. Whatever God's asking you to do, this is your time, your decision. Would you please stand and we're going to pray.